Okay, so it's a pleasure to be here. So this talk is based on ongoing work with Xiaolan Qi, and it's basically a variation on a very nice paper by Gao, Jeffries, and Wald. And we had some other variations on other development of that idea in a paper with Douglas Stanford and Shenbin Yang, and also there's a related paper by Ioana Corcucola and myself. So this talk will center on ADS2 space. So two-dimensional anti-sitter space can be written in terms of these coordinates. So we can think of the Penrose diagram. So ignoring here the denominator, we get the Penrose diagram, which is a strip. So we have a time direction that goes from plus to minus infinity, and a sigma direction that goes between 0 and pi. So ADS2 now contains this factor here, which tells us that the gravitational potential grows when you go towards sigma equal to 0 or sigma equal to pi. So in some sense, these are the two boundaries of the space. So these are two asymptotic boundaries of this two-dimensional space. There's an infinite distance to the boundary and so on. The two boundaries are disconnected in the sense that if you sit on one of the boundaries, you cannot go to the other and while remaining on the boundary, but they are causally connected through the bulk. So if you send a signal from one point here on this boundary through the bulk, this signal can reach a point on the other boundary. If you consider a particle in this space, this particle will feel the gravitational potential produced by this warp factor, so it will be repelled from the boundaries. So the particle, if you shoot the particle, let's say, moving to the left, it will oscillate here in the space. And this whole motion is characterized by the symmetries of the space, which form an SL2 group. So here in these coordinates, we only manifestly see one of the symmetries, which is the time translation in this capital time T, sometimes called also global time translation. So these coordinates are sometimes called global coordinates. They cover all of ADS2 space, as opposed to other coordinates we will introduce later, which cover only portions of this space. Okay, and so here we make manifest one of the isometries, but the full space has three isometries forming an SL2R group, symmetry group. Now, the fact that we have two boundaries and that they are causally connected through the bulk also implies that we can view this space as a traversable wormhole. So we have two asymptotic regions, and we can go between the two asymptotic regions by going through this geometric connection or this wormhole that connects the two asymptotic regions. In ADS2, you can choose various coordinate choices, and I said there is another set of coordinates you can choose. So there you can write a portion of ADS2 in these coordinates, where, again, rho equal to infinity here corresponds to the boundary. This time t corresponds to shifts in t correspond to another isometry that ADS2 has, different from the previous one. And this isometry corresponds to boosts around this center point. So when we fix rho and, let's say, move along the t direction, we move along some curves that are roughly have the shape of this arrow here, and they reach the boundary of the space. So in this presentation, we have, again, two boundaries. So here, if rho is positive, we cover this orange region. At rho equal to 0, the coefficient here of the time direction goes to 0, so that it's a horizon. So if you consider the, for example, the Euclidean version of this, it will be a disk, and that will be a point where the Euclidean time shrinks to 0 size. And these coordinates cover, well, only a portion, and if you take the negative value of rho here, that covers the other orange region here on the left. And if you take these two orange regions together, then again, now we explore only a portion here of the total boundary, but from the point of view of this time, it goes from plus to minus infinity, so it looks like the whole boundary. these two boundary regions are causally disconnected. So you cannot, if you start on some point here on this boundary region and you send the signal, you cannot get to the other boundary region. So this now you can view this as some kind of wormhole, but it's a non-traversable wormhole in this case. And as I already mentioned, so shifts in T or capital T or this small script T are conjugate to two different elements of the SL2R isometries of ADS2. So these are just some generic properties of ADS2. Now, it turns out that quantum gravity with asymptotically ADS2 boundary conditions does not quite make sense. So it's not a problem that is well defined. It turns out that in order to define properly the system, you need to break some of the ADS2 isometries. So we should think of some space which is not quite ADS2 but nearly ADS2. And so there are a couple of ways of doing this. So we should break the SL2R isometries, but we can preserve some of the isometries. If you preserve this T isometry of the thermal coordinates, then it turns out that that can be interpreted as the thermofield double of a nearly CFT1. So it has, we think that this kind of spacetimes should have a dual in terms of this nearly CFT1. So theories which are quantum mechanical theories that have an almost scale invariance. They are almost scale invariant in the infrared. And so the question that we will try to address in this talk is if we have ADS2 with this other global time translation isometry, what is that dual to? What is the quantum mechanical description of that system? Now, this reason that ADS2 doesn't work is also a reason why we should not write an equality. There is no ADS2 CFT1 duality. Okay, so there are similar dualities in higher dimensions, but not in two dimensions. So this side has some intrinsic problems in its definition, and also CFT1 doesn't make sense for a theory with finite number of degrees of freedom. But we can have dualities like this with nearly, adding the word nearly in each of the two sides, we will have some dualities, and we'll discuss some examples in a moment.
Sorry, Juan, can you discuss the importance of the phrase with T isometry?
Yeah. So so we said that we needed to break the SL2R symmetry of the space, right? But we'll preserve one of the isometries. So there are three isometries, and we'll preserve only one.
But
right?
When you say preserve, you don't mean just restricting it to time translation during solutions. You mean that the system has some overall time translation symmetry.
Yeah, that this is that there is a vacuum, right? That
there's a Hamiltonian.
Yeah, there is a Hamiltonian, and then there will be a vacuum which is invariant under these symmetries.
Great.
And it will be described in the gravity solution as some gravity configuration which will preserve the isometry of the global time translation of ADS2, and we'll look close to that ADS2. That is the goal, okay?
And why is there a question mark in the lower line?
Because this is what we are trying to address in the talk. What is the dual of this system? It should be the dual of some traversable wormhole, and we'll try to understand what that is. So it's the question mark we'll try to answer in this talk. So it's the point of the talk. But first, we will recall some facts about nearly ADS2 boundary conditions. So I'll discuss this in general. This applies to both the two cases that we discussed. So for these two cases. So the idea is that we keep the leading effects that perturb away from ADS2. So we imagine that this ADS2 arises from, let's say, some higher dimensional theory. I'll discuss that in more detail in a second. But we keep the leading effects, and those leading effects can be described by universal actions, by some general action, which has this form. So first, there is this term. So this term is what you would naively write for ADS2 quantum gravity, so that's simply the Einstein action in two dimensions. This action is topological and cannot describe any dynamics, and in fact, it sets the gravity equations. If you had only this term in the gravitational action, would set the matter stress tensor to zero. But this term gives us something. It gives us something. It's a topological term. And in situations with non-trivial topologies like black holes, it gives us some non-trivial contribution, which is the extremal entropy or the entropy associated to these ideas to space. It counts the number of degrees of freedom that you basically need to construct the ES2 solution. This is certainly a term that is very relevant to counting the BPS entropy, or what was discussed previously. So now our focus will be related to effects that include matter and include allow for non-trivial excitations, and that involves adding this new term to the action, where we have a scalar field and the two-dimensional curvature and some kind of cosmological constant term. So this action is a universal description for near extremal black holes, and I'll try to explain here in this transparency the origin of the higher dimensional origin of these spaces. So the idea is that you are considering a black hole that is close to extremality. So there are some, for example, if you have a charged black hole, the mass should be bigger than the charge due to cosmic censorship, and if the mass gets very close to the charge, then the black hole develops a scaling symmetry and develops a long throat where the geometry is close to ADS2 space. So if you are exactly at extremality, this throat is infinitely long. But we don't want to be exactly at extremality, we want to be slightly away from extremality so that we are keeping the leading effects that deviate away from extremality. And so one important characteristic of this geometry is the size of the transverse dimensions. So we have ADS2 times some other space. So if it was a four-dimensional black hole, then this ADS2 will be made out of the radial direction and the time direction. And then there will be two other dimensions, which are the two-dimensional sphere that are transverse and whose area will have a fixed value here at the very deep end of the throat. But as we start going out, the area deviates from that extremal value of the area. So what we were calling phi naught is the extremal value of the area, and phi is the deviation of that area from the extremal value. And that's the degree of freedom we need to keep in order to have a well-defined problem. As I said, the sum of these two terms comes from the area of the extra dimensions. And this action on its own has no bulk excitations. So there are no bulk propagating modes. That is related to the fact that that's related to the fact that there are no spherically symmetric gravitational waves, right? Or propagating gravitational excitations. So there are no bulk excitations, but when we put a boundary, then there are some boundary excitations. So there are something gravitational degrees of freedom, which we can call boundary gravitons. And these gravitational degrees of freedom have to do with the location of the physical boundary inside ADS2. So we can think of this gravitational dynamics in the following way. So we had this term in the action. So the equations of motion for phi set the curvature to be constant. And so we have the metric will be exactly the metric of ADS2, independent of even if we add some matter that couples only to the metric, then we continue to have this equation. So the matter fields, let's say denoted here by yellow, they propagate on a fixed ADS2 spacetime. And then we will put some boundary conditions that this dilaton field, so there will be some equations that this field, dilaton field, will evolve, and this dilaton field will grow as you approach the boundary, and we'll say that the physical boundary will be located when this field reaches a specific value. So if we are thinking of this as coming from higher dimensions, that specific value might be the value at which we join to the higher dimensional solution, for example. But we don't need to be too specific about that. What we need to remember is that we will put the boundary at the position that is determined by the value of the dilaton. And this boundary graviton we are talking about can be viewed as the motion of this boundary inside the ADS2 space. In fact, we can think of that gravitational degree of freedom indeed as the dynamics of a particle moving in an ADS2 space and it will be a problem that will have all the isometries of ADS2, so we'll have the SL2 isometries of ADS2. So the whole dynamics in this setup reduces to some dynamics of particles in the bulk, and then there are the dynamics of the two independent boundaries. But we should also, the physical quantities are, so what we care for physics is the shape of this internal, the space here between the two boundaries. So if we do an overall translation of this whole system, that should not count as a physical excitation. So we are quotienting by an overall SL2R symmetry. And so the full space is this one. We can think of this quotient by SL2R symmetry as remnants of the Hamiltonian constraints of general relativity. So in general relativity, we have some Hamiltonian constraints. We solved most of them, but we are left with these three that we didn't quite solve, so we impose that at the very end. And so that's one way to treat this gravitational system. So the message of this is that there is a boundary graviton that lives here on the left, boundary graviton that lives on the right, and then the whole system is well, knows about gravitational back reaction and so on through the constraints of GR, which in this case reduce purely to these constraints. Now, the fact that I was saying before that we went to define the problem, we need to break some of the isometries. These isometries are broken by the trajectories of these boundaries. So these boundaries follows a particular trajectory, and those particular trajectories are breaking some of the isometries of ADS2. If we had a theory with just pure gravity, so the action we wrote so far without matter, then the only solution with phi growing towards the boundary, growing towards both boundaries, is the so-called thermal ADS2 that has this time translation isometry that looks like a boost around the center. So this looks like near extremum black holes. And so if we want to describe the one with the global time isometry, we will need some sort of matter. So now it turns out that it's not quite ordinary matter for the following reason. So one of the equations, so this is one of the equations of motion for the field phi. If we have the action we wrote before and we add some matter, then when we vary with respect to the G++ component of the metric, the matter gives rise to the stress tensor, the plus-plus component of the stress tensor, and the term in the action that we were discussing so far gives us this equation. And this is a two-dimensional version of the Reichardt-Dury equation in higher dimensions. This is this, remember, was like the area, and this is telling us how the area changes along a null direction. And so we can integrate this once, and so here on the right-hand side we'll get the integral of the stress tensor. On the left-hand side, this is a total derivative, so we'll get the gradient of the dilaton evaluated on plus and minus infinity. But the gradient of the dilaton will be positive here because the dilaton is growing towards the boundary. And on the other side, we are asking that it will also be growing towards the boundary. So we'll also, here we'll, on the left-hand side, we'll get something negative. And therefore, the integral of the plus-plus component of the matter will also have to be negative. Now, this, in general, ordinary matter obeys a property called the average null energy condition, which says exactly the opposite of this. So it says that the integral of T++ should be positive. Okay. So in that sense, we are saying that it's no ordinary matter. Now let's this particular thing that we see here very clearly in this ADS2 case is actually a general result in general relativity, so I'm going to just mention that general result as a small digression. So there is something called topological censorship in general relativity, which says that we cannot have disconnected boundaries that are connected through the bulk. And a closely related result is that we cannot have non-trivial topology in asymptotically flat space. So suppose you have an asymptotically flat space solution, and let's say you cut out two little spheres and you join in a wormhole, then this is also forbidden. And notice it's forbidden even if it doesn't lead to any obvious causality violation, because it might be that the length of the wormhole is longer than the distance between them, so it might still be consistent with causality, but these theorems forbid it in classical GR. But one important assumption of those theorems is that we obey the positive null energy condition, and, well, I should have said also they are obeyed even with the weaker assumption of the integrated positive, well, the saying that the integrated null energy condition is positive. Okay, so we need to, so that's a special situation. But it's important that this integrated null energy condition might not be possible when we include certain quantum effects. So the quantum effects that we are discussing in the ADS2 case will be effects that somehow have to connect the two boundaries. So these two boundaries were disconnected, we have to connect them through the exterior space that is not taken into account in when we talk about this ADS2 region of the geometry. So in that situations, we don't have to obey the null energy condition. So in principle, for example, if we had the same geometry we discussed before, it might be that that in a situation like this, the quantum fields don't have, well, in a situation like this, the quantum fields don't have to obey the integrated null energy condition. And so you can have a situation where the integrated null energy through this wormhole might be negative, and you might have a solution of this form. Of course, for that to happen, and not to violate any of other, not to violate causality, you need that the distance through the wormhole should be longer than, or the time it takes, more precisely, the time it takes to go through the wormhole should be longer than the time it takes to go outside. Okay. So these are in principle allowed, and it would be nice to search more actively for these geometries. I'm not going to, maybe I should have mentioned this at the end of the talk, but we'll, these in principle are allowed by this setup. So we're going to imagine a situation where we have something like this, and these two are two near extremal black holes, let's say, that are somehow close by, held by some force we didn't specify. And then the fact that they are very close by can induce some couplings can induce some terms that mix the boundary conditions of the fields inside this ADS2 region. So we're going back to ADS2, and we are just simply going to ignore what higher dimensional situation gives rise to what I'm going to discuss. We're just going to assume that we have this nearly ADS2 gravity plus some matter, and that somehow the boundary conditions will impose some boundary conditions connecting the two sides. So we're going to add a term in the interaction Lagrangian, which is an integral over all times of the field on the left side and the field on the right side. So we had this ADS2 that had these two boundaries. It's roughly like making the two boundaries touch. So imagining that the two boundaries touch through the exterior geometry. So that's the type of setup we'll consider. And we're going to assume this coupling is relatively small. So this U is the proper length along the boundary. It's the boundary time of some supposedly dual field theory. So these type of couplings generate null energy and allow for solutions, and will allow for these solutions with global time isometry, where phi grows towards both boundaries. And So we'll analyze this problem, and in parallel we'll look at a similar problem in the so-called SYK model. So what is this SYK model? So this is a model proposed by Sachs Levandier and then refined a bit more by Kitaev. So it's a quantum mechanical model where we only have a time direction, and the Hilbert space is spanned by n Majorana fermions, and we have a Hamiltonian that includes these quartic couplings with random coefficients, which are have a Gaussian distribution. There is a small generalization of these models where we, instead of having four fermions interacting, we have Q fermions, where Q is any odd number. So this is a theory where at very short distances, this coupling is not important, but at very short times, I should have said, but at longer times or lower energies, we this coupling becomes important. It's a relevant deformation, and the theory becomes strongly coupled when we consider times which are much bigger in units of 1 over j than this scale set by the coupling. So we're going to analyze the system in the Larsen limit. And for in the strongly coupled region where these times are times j, and the units of j are much bigger than 1. So this time could also be the inverse temperature, or beta times j, much bigger than 1. But still, but not too big, so that many energy levels are still contributing to the dynamics. I mean, if we went to extremely long times or extremely low temperatures, we will be exploring just the energies above the actual ground state of this system, which is. But that's not what we want to do. We want to consider higher energies, which are a little higher, that explores still many energy levels, actually exponentially many energy levels. So the spectrum of this system is, let me see. So we have some spectrum which has, so this is the number of energy levels, and this is the energy. So there's 0, and then this is something of order minus j times n, and j times n. So because the dimension of the Hilbert space goes like 2 to the n over 2, so it's exponentially large. So we have an exponentially large number of energy levels here. And we are focusing on the low energy subsector, some low energy states, but still with exponentially many energy levels. So that's the regime where we are, where we'll be analyzing this. And especially in this regime, the SYK model has some properties in common with this nearly ADS2 gravity. It basically has the same gravitational dynamics. So it's some dynamics in the SYK which mimics and is perfectly identical to the gravitational dynamics that we have in ADS2. And furthermore, this dynamics is expected to be universal for any system that has an almost conformal symmetry in the infrared, any quantum mechanical system with this almost conformal symmetry in the infrared, which is not integrable. So we expect this to be a generic feature. So let me say this in a slightly more detail here in this transparency. So we have two kinds of theories. So one is this nearly ADS2 gravity that describes the near horizon geometry of near extrema black holes. And on the other hand, we have this SYK model, a quantum mechanical theory. We define a number of degrees of freedom, and we can then go to low energies, and there we find that there is some, when we analyze the model, we find some conformal invariant part, so some part that we can analyze using conformal invariant methods, and then some part that is associated to the breaking of this conformal symmetry, and has some dynamics which we can think in terms of the dynamics of a spontaneously and explicitly broken reparametrization time symmetry. And that dynamics is the same as the boundary dynamics or the gravitational dynamics of the ADS2 gravity. So the ADS2 gravity also will have some other dynamical degrees of freedom which correspond to the matter fields that you have in ADS2. These two are not the same. So we don't know exactly which matter fields we have in the case of ADS2. We don't know a precise duality between ADS2 and some particular gravitational dynamics. But what we do know is that there's this universal sector, which is the same in both cases. So this universal sector is somewhat analogous to the fact that, for example, if you have a 1 plus 1 dimensional conformal field theory, or scale invariant system, then we have the Virasoro symmetry, and all the states that you can generate using the Virasoro algebra will be common for any 1 plus 1 dimensional CFT. So that's those are common for everyone. Here is more or less the same story, except that you have this additional complication that you have to break the symmetry just slightly in order to get non-trivial dynamics. So I mentioned the fact that in the context of ADS2, we can think of this gravitational dynamics as the position of a boundary. The same dynamics can be also understood in terms of a dynamical degree of freedom, which is a reparametrization, so a function of time, simply some generic function of time, and then we write an action for that function of time. That function of time relates the boundary time along this along the boundary to some time coordinate in ADS space, in a fixed some ADS background, ADS2 background. So that's the story here. And this blue stuff, so this stuff that is common, is responsible for many features. So one is it explains the temperature dependence of the entropy at low temperatures. So the fact that that the temperature has a piece that is linear in the temperature is explained by this. It explains some aspects of the gravitational back reaction. In particular, it explains the chaos exponent, so how certain commutators of operators defined at different times grow with time. It's determined by this action and this the dynamics, this aspect of the dynamics. And also for what we are going to discuss, for the traversability of wormholes and the location of the horizon and so on, are all affected by these dynamics, can also be studied in this way. So the system we're going to study will be, we're going to take two copies of SYK. So the reason we take two copies is because in the gravity system we had two boundaries. And so we have two identical copies with identical couplings. And then we're going to add an interaction between those two copies, between the fields on the left and the fields on the right. So this is the fermion field on the left copy and the fermion field on the right copies. So you could imagine you have two, in a laboratory, you have a bunch of fermions corresponding to one SYK, another bunch of fermions to the other, and you push some simple interaction between them. This interaction, from the point of view of this low energy limit of the SYK, is also a relevant interaction that will take the system away from its this scale invariant point and will generate a mass gap. Now, we can analyze this problem at low energies, and at low energies we can approximate the relevant dynamics by focusing on this gravitational sector. So what is analogous to the gravitational sector, so this reparametrization degree of freedom. And so we can write, so for a single SYK we had said that the relevant action is, yeah, maybe I should emphasize this a little more, let me go back. So if you ignore the fact that you are breaking the conformal symmetry, this theory, as a Euclidean field theory, has some zero modes corresponding to reparametrization. So the theory has an, in this, ignoring the breakings, has an exact reparametrization symmetry. The equation, the low energy equations have an exact reparametrization symmetry. But the solution breaks that reparametrization symmetry spontaneously. So you have a bunch of Goldstone bosons, and if you integrate over all those Goldstone bosons, you would get an infinite answer, which would be inconsistent with the finiteness of the Hilbert space. So in order to remove that, you need to remember that the symmetry is also explicitly broken. So no matter how small an energy you go to, there is still some remnant of the fact that the UV theory didn't have that exact symmetry, and so you'll break it slightly and you'll give some action for these Goldstone bosons. This mechanism is similar to, and in this way we can think of this action as determined by this emergent reparametrization symmetry, which is both spontaneously and explicitly broken. This is similar to how chiral symmetry works in QCD, where you can think, first you take the approximation that the quarks are massless, and in that approximation you have a spontaneously broken chiral symmetry, and then you add a little bit of mass for the quarks, and then you should also break that chiral symmetry explicitly. And it's important to view it in both ways. So that action is determined for each SYK by those principles, and so we have two copies of this action. And then this term in the Hamiltonian can be approximated by its expectation value. but it should be an expectation value in a background where we did one of these reparametrizations. So this expression here is simply the conformal two-point function, but with a reparametrization done on the left and on the right. So that's how the gravitational degrees of freedom couple to this interaction term. This is somewhat similar to how we derive the coupling between pions and protons, for example. Now, the global SL, this system has a global SL2R symmetry where we change both F and F left and F right by a global SL2R transformation, and that should be set to zero. So this is parallel to the discussion we had in the gravity side, where we said that an overall shift of all the positions of all the particles and the boundaries should not be counted as a symmetry. Okay, so that this is what we have. So now we define a new variable through this tangent, so we can think this is just a simple trick that we can explain. The origin is explained just by some SL2R properties, but if we define the new variable this way, we can think of t as now, so we can rewrite this action now in terms of this t of u, and this t is basically this global time. So we can think of the dynamical variable as being the global time of that ADS2 and the map between proper time, which is u, and this global time in ADS2 in those coordinates we discussed that we have here. Well, this variable is analog of that global time coordinate. So in the gravity description, if we had these two boundaries, so we can think of f left or f right as t left or t right, the global time, the map between proper distance and global time. And then this matter leads to an interaction between these two boundary particles, so to an extra potential. If you wish, you can view it as an attractive potential between the two boundaries, that is taken into account by this term. So then you find that simply assuming that these t left and t right are linear functions of the coordinate, of the proper time. So this is just simply saying that there is a linear relationship between the proper time and this the time in ADS2. That is a solution of the equations of motion of the previous action. We demand that this SL2R charges, so these are the Hamiltonian constraint and the couple and the translation constraint of GR. We set them to zero, and then that gives us an equation which determines the value of T prime. So it's essentially this equation, which says that this T prime, this equation essentially says that this T prime is small in units of J as long as mu over J is small. And always a solution exists when this is a small quantity. So we're imagining that this perturbation is a small mass scale compared to the mass scale J, which determined when the theory became strongly coupled. And with this region of conformal dimensions, we find that this new scale, so this is an energy scale. It's between mu, that's the coupling we were turning on, and this scale J, which determined when the strong coupling region, that said the region where you went into strong coupling in the SYK model. Now, this analysis I'm making is completely common to both SYK and nearly ADS2 gravity. Now, this is an energy scale which is telling us the translation between energies measured with respect to this global time coordinate that we discussed in the first transparency and the actual energies of the dual boundary theory. And the relationship is more or less as follows. So imagine you have a field in ADS2 corresponding to an operator of dimension delta. And then you have an excitation of those fields in ADS2, then their energy spectrum, which is fixed by SL2R symmetry, is S delta plus n. And then the actual energy in the boundary theory will just be given by that times this energy scale. Now, there are other degrees of freedom here which correspond to the boundary gravity, the actual physical degrees of freedom of the boundary graviton. And those correspond to, so imagine we have no matter and we have these two boundaries, and in principle, if you kick them a little bit, they can oscillate. In fact, this is a stable configuration, so if you kick them, they will oscillate with some frequency, and the frequency is given, again, by this same energy scale. So this part is not conformal invariant, so the spectrum is not invariant under the symmetries that determine this other spectrum. But it shows a couple of things. First, that we have stable equilibrium, and then that we have the same energy scale as the scale of particles that live inside. So from the point of view of nearly ADS2, we can say that we have these two boundary trajectories. There is some negative energy in the middle that leads to some force between these two particles. And then when you kick the two particles, they can oscillate a little bit. Those are those harmonic oscillator degrees of freedom we discussed a moment ago. And then when we add some matter, you get some spectrum, which is determined by the properties of conformal symmetry. So notice that, so we started with this SYK model, and we added a relevant perturbation, and we flowed in the infrared to some gap system. But this is not any ordinary gap system. It's a gap system where the whole energy spectrum is determined still by this conformal symmetry. So many of its properties are determined by the properties of conformal symmetry. So in the SYK model, we can also solve this theory beyond the low energy limit. So what I said up to now is common to nearly ADS2 gravity and SYK. But in SYK, we can also analyze the system in a slightly broader set of configurations. So the SYK model is nice and solvable because for large n, there is a special set of diagrams that can be resummed. And, there's a special set of diagrams that give the large n answer. And that special set of diagrams is simple enough that they can be calculated explicitly. And this can be calculated in terms of a closed set of equations for the fermion propagator. So you have the fermion propagator at two different times. And then you can write down these equations that come from these leading diagrams. I'm not going to write the leading diagrams, but the important point is that, there's some explicit closed set of equations that you can solve. So when we have these two coupled SYK systems, we have similar equations, except that we have now the propagator of between the left and the left, or the left and the right, and so on. So we have a slightly more complicated structure, but the story is completely identical. So instead of these equations, we have some other equations. So you don't need to look at the details of these equations, sorry, for writing them. The only reason I wrote them is just to know that they are concrete equations. And mu appears here at some point in these equations. Now, the simplest answer for solving these equations that is actually valid for mu over j very small is to say that these functions have a conformal invariant form. And this solves the low energy limit of the equations we just wrote. When you include the leading reparametrization symmetry breaking effects, it leads to the previous discussion we just discussed. So if you want to go beyond that limit, so mu over j, which is not so small but is larger, then there are two approaches. One is numerical, so you can take those equations and you discretize the time direction. So you make, let's say you have Euclidean time, so you make, you discretize Euclidean time, then those equations that we saw before reduce to some equations for some matrices, and you solve those equations. So that's one method. The other method is to do a large Q approximation. So consider these equations for this variant of the model that has Q very large, and then you can find an analytic solution. There is one interesting story that arises when you study the finite temperature situation, and I'm going to describe that story now. In general, when you have ADS, this ADS in global coordinates, in, let's say, higher dimensional versions of ADS, there is a well-known thermal phase transition between two possible configurations. And in this setup, the two possible configurations are the following. So we can have, let's say, in Euclidean space, an ADS2 strip. So now this vertical direction is Euclidean time, which is just the analytic continuation of the previous geometry. And we identify, after a time of order beta, we identify this line with this line. So this is a periodically identified Euclidean ADS2. So there, the main contribution to the free energy is really the ground state energy of the configuration. And then there are some exponentially small corrections that have to do with the particles moving around this circle. Then there is a high temperature phase where we have two disconnected geometries, two black holes, two separate black holes. So in the leading approximation, the partition function is just given by the sum of the free energies of the two black holes. And in particular, they have a large ground state entropy contribution, relatively large. And then this was the finite, the linear in temperature correction that we mentioned before. And then the mu, this is the leading term that depends on mu. It's some coupling, goes like mu squared, and you have to insert two couplings. So there are these boundary couplings that connect the two black holes. So here, the leading approximation, this is has a free energy. The left side has a free energy which is constant, and here this has an entropy which is essentially constant plus some small corrections. And they actually, these two approximations have an overlapping regime of validity, and so we have a first order phase transition between them. So these two solutions are, so here we can analyze these regimes by using this low energy approximation and the Saltoire symmetries and so on, and the Schwarzian description that we mentioned before. But the underlying conformal solutions are really different. So in one case, the left-right system is connected through through the geometry, and in the other case, each black hole is somehow connected to itself or to its thermal field double configuration. Maybe I should make this point a little more clear. So we have two systems. What we are calling the left and right system. And because we are at finite temperature, we also have the thermal field double copy of the system. So we have two other systems. Let me call it left prime and right prime, right? So at low temperatures, we have a geometry that is connected in this way, right, and connected here in this way. So that's the low temperature geometry, the blue one here. And at high temperatures, we have instead a geometry where in the interior, they are connected in this other way, and this connection is reflected in the underlying pattern of correlation functions that we have in this, for example, in the SYK analysis. So it can be seen both in the gravity and the SYK analysis that these are the connections. Now, a large Q, we can analytically find actually a set of configurations that smoothly interpolates between these two. So we can go continuously between these two phases. And in order to draw this line that goes continuously, we really need to go beyond this conformal approximation, beyond this Schwarzian approximation. And we have to take into account, one way to say it is that we, so this is just qualitative, that we have to take somehow the back reaction of the matter inside this ADS2. So once we put this boundary interaction, there is no clear way to distinguish these two phases. It's not that the two phases are distinguished by some order parameter or some simple quantity. In fact, here we see that we can go continuously between the two. Now, in higher dimensional ADS spaces, we also have had a situation like this. So we had a phase which was empty ADS2 spaces, empty ADS. Then we had a phase that corresponds to large black holes in ADS. And then we had a phase that involved small black holes in ADS. So that corresponds to this region here. And so the fact that the large black holes and the small black holes are smoothly connected, that is also true in higher dimensional, in a higher dimensional setup. But in general, in gravity, in just ordinary Einstein gravity, we don't have a connection between the empty ADS space and the small black hole in ADS space. We think of that as two different topologies, sharply distinguishable. Now, if we are in string theory, then we expect that when the small black hole gets to be of order the string size, then at that point, the black hole should presumably smoothly connect into a gas of strings, and perhaps there is a maybe there is a smooth connection, but it's some connection which cannot be has not been analyzed explicitly in any case. So in this particular case, in the S by K model, we have some transition which looks a bit like that transition. This is sometimes called the Horowitz-Polchinski correspondence point that says that when black holes have a stringy size, they can smoothly turn into strings.
So, I agree that in higher dimensions, clearly small black holes and EDS have a different topology than you think of them as connected.
Yeah.
But if I discrete the free energy, is it
No. So, no. Well. This curve, so if you just compute naively the free energy, right, so this curve will continue here to infinity on the right, and they would touch here at infinity.
Yeah,
yeah, that's to leave ignoring the matter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that is not so different.
Well, the difference is that this is not at infinity, it's at the finite location, and in this case, we can analytically find how they connect. So it's a fact that you can track it down in a solvable model that you can go through this. And I think it's giving us an indication that perhaps the same could be true in the case of string theory. But this is just a speculation. The solid thing is that you can do this in this particular model. So that was analytics. So you can also fix, let's say, small value of q, q equal to 4, and you calculate the free energy, and then here the blue and red dots correspond to regions where you have two phases. So you start from the high temperature phase, you get one solution, from the low temperature phase the other solution, and roughly when the color changes when you have that phase transition. Okay, so now we'll discuss some other situation, so some other physical process. So imagine that we are interested in the case that we have two decoupled systems, and we're trying to make the thermofield double state. So a thermofield double state is a state that appears sometimes, when we discuss wormholes and so on, we often talk about the thermofield double state. It's a state so we take a thermal system we're considering a system at finite temperature, and then, so that's described by some thermal density matrix. But then we consider a particular purification of that, where we take an identical copy of the system and we make a pure state that is such that when you trace out one of the systems, you get the thermal density matrix. So it's a very particular pure state in the Hilbert space of the direct product of the Hilbert space of two copies of the system. You might wonder how difficult it is to actually make it in these situations. So imagine that you wanted to make it in the lab for two SYK systems. So there's the following procedure will generate for you a state that is very close to the thermofield double state. And the procedure is the following. So first you create two SYK systems, two identical ones, and you couple them as we discussed before. And then we couple them further to a heat sink so that the system reaches to its ground state. So now we have the ground state of the coupled system. And that has a gravity dual, I shouldn't talk about the gravity dual. Has some description which it's whose gravity analog would be a situation where we have the two boundary particles moving sort of straight up in global ADS, and then at equal to zero, so that this down part here is describing the ground state of the coupled system, which is what we've been discussing so far. And then at equal to zero, we turn off the coupling, so we go to the case where they're completely decoupled. So in that case, we lose this attractive force between the two boundaries, and the two boundaries will accelerate towards the boundary of ADS. And here at infinite time, this situation, we get here a motion for these boundaries, which is the same as the type of motion we had for the thermofield double state. So the thermal state. This is some way to get a state that is close. Now, why do I say close and not identical? So from what I said so far, it looks like it's identical to the thermofield double. So the reason is that when you turn off the coupling here, you produce some particles, you produce some excitations, some extra excitations, and those extra excitations make the state slightly different than the thermofield double. So as mu goes to zero, the two states become more closely related to the thermofield double. So Now, an additional comment is that even if the couplings are slightly different, we still get a solution which looks connected. And so far we discussed taking two states, two systems, which are two identical copies of the SYK model with identical couplings. So they are random, but if we choose some random value for one, you choose exactly the same random value for the other. Okay, so that's what we discussed so far. I imagine that you don't do that, but you take two SYK models, but their couplings are different. They are either not perfectly correlated or completely uncorrelated. Do we get configurations which are somewhat similar? And the answer is yes. So you get somewhat similar configurations that look connected. They would have a gravity description with a connected geometry. But the energy gap becomes smaller when the couplings are different. In particular, this is kind of arguing that we do not need perfect matchings of energies to build a state that is close to the thermofield double, or that behaves as if the gravity dual was connected. So so the thermofield double state we've been mentioning has this expression, this formal expression in general. So here, if we trace over, let's say, the left system, we get the thermal density matrix for the right system. So this expression makes you think that, oh, well, we need a perfect matching between all energy levels here. But even in systems where the fundamental energy spectrum doesn't match, like two SYK models with different couplings, we can still have states that are somewhat close to the thermofield double.
Can you say what somewhat close means?
What? Sorry, say again.
Can you say what somewhat close means and what kind of states would qualify as somewhat close?
Yeah. So these are states where we have these are states that can have properties similar to the properties we expect for a connected wormhole in gravity, that we can send signals from one to the other, to the other side. So that's roughly what I mean. Systems that have an energy gap, right? Now, let me say this sort of more clearly in a gravity situation. So you could consider a wormhole in gravity, where you have, let's say there is an additional scalar field that is, let's say, massless, and you have two different values of the scalar field at the two boundaries, right? So this the dual description will involve, this massless field would be some kind of coupling, let's say, and they would have different couplings on the two sides. So that's a situation where you get something close to a wormhole. It won't be exactly the same wormhole because there is some gradient energy of the scalar field. So we won't have exactly these two isometries, but we might be quite close to it. But nevertheless, the fundamental energy levels at the very microscopic level are quite different, would be quite different in this situation. That's what I'm trying to emphasize.
So, I mean, in those gravity contexts, yeah. The solutions you would write down using the classical dynamics,
yeah. Yes.
Okay. And so perturbative methods would not allow you to conclude in that context that the wormhole becomes traversable.
Well, I mean, I agreed too fast. Sorry. In these cases, you have traversable wormholes which are still infinite. They're just they don't have exactly the same geometry as ADS2. They're slightly longer, right? So we had a situation where we had these two boundaries, right? With some negative energy, so we have this type of situation. Now we imagine we change the boundary conditions from some scalar field. We add a little bit of positive energy to this configuration. Right? As long as that positive energy is relatively small compared to the negative energy that we used to create it, we still will have the same type of solution.
Yes.
Right? But the point is that so that's a small sort of for further one change of this geometry, relatively small. So here. There are no causal shadows. So here, if you are sitting on this boundary, you have access to the whole space by waiting long enough, right? That's simply because the two boundaries are coupled to each other, right? So by waiting, if you send in something from one boundary, right? Okay, so you can describe it from one boundary. If you send in something from the other boundary, by waiting a little bit, it will appear close to the other boundary thanks to the interaction. And so this motion is related, yeah. Could be viewed as somewhat related to teleportation in a way that I'm not describing. So what I'm trying to emphasize is that these energy levels are exponentially close one to the other, right? So a question you can ask is that in order to have this connected geometry, do I need to have the energy levels exponentially matching with perfect precision, or can we tolerate, you know, that they match roughly, just at the overall level of density? Or well, if we have a situation like we have like two different microscopic coupling, two different, let's say we have a field and the field has different values, right? That's another one change in the Hamiltonian. So we expect that it will change the relative energy spacings by a huge amount, a relatively huge amount compared, because those are exponentially small. That was the point I was trying to emphasize. And I think if you thought a bit about these wormholes and this fact that you can put these fields in a different way, you already knew this, but I'm just trying to emphasize it. It's not directly related to what I was talking about. So the conclusion is that we have a variant of the Gao-Jeffreys-Wall teleportation idea, and we can generate states that lead to traversable wormholes, but they are completely eternal, so they exist forever. And they can be analyzed in the SYK context. And we discuss some thermal aspects and aspects of the phase transition. We also realize a state that is close to the thermofield double as the ground state of a coupled system, so with a very simple coupling. There's one aspect I forgot to mention about this thermal phase transition, which is the fact that if you look at the microcanonical ensemble, you can go continuously between these two, and these phases are completely stable in the microcanonical ensemble. Okay, good. And in the future, I guess so everything that I said in this case, I didn't say it explicitly, but well, I say it right now. We are imagining we have n fields in the bulk. So that was manifest in the SYK discussion, in the gravity discussion that wasn't, I didn't make it manifest, but in order to get the solutions at the classical level in gravity, we need to have n fields in the bulk. So in order to find an ordinary gravity example, by ordinary gravity I mean one where we have order one number of fields, then we need to actually solve a more quantum problem of this boundary motion, and we went some way doing that. It would be nice to find examples more similar to this picture that we were discussing before. So an example where these two black holes, this ADS2 is the near horizon region corresponding to two black holes that are close enough in space that the coupling that we had to postulate is actually generated dynamically, and seeing whether these solutions exist and what their properties are would be interesting. One could ask whether they can be made with rotating black holes. So that, so those are different aspects. And in general, these points in the future are just to understand a little better what kind of solutions or what kind of configurations you can make mixing classical and quantum effects, which is what we are doing here. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. So, if we think about a single-sided black hole,
yeah.
Do you think there is a relevant role for any kinds of couplings like this?
No.
Okay.
No. Yeah. I mean, the whole discussion here was when we had two black holes.
Well, okay. Mm. So there can't be anything like this for a single-sided black hole?
No. So this is, well, here the idea was to try to understand a traversable wormhole with two boundaries. So we needed the two boundaries. So these two boundaries would be embedded in some higher dimensional space as two black holes. So I don't know a way to get this with just only one black hole.
Well, I guess, you know, one way of describing these couplings is there are non-local couplings, right, with respect to the bigger space.
Yes.
So, you know, one could certainly consider those kinds of things in a single-sided black hole, too.
These couplings look non-local if you think about just this one. So the idea is that this would be embedded in the full gravity theory in a picture more or less like this one, where we have two black holes, right? Then there is the wormhole that goes through here, right? from the point of view of this wormhole, there is a coupling that makes it, that relates a field here to a field over here, right? And that looks non-local if you just only know about this shape of the geometry. But since this is embedded in this bigger space, these two black holes are relatively close to each other, and this coupling could be induced by integrating out these fields that are...
if they're not space-like separated.
Now, let's say they are space-like separated, but the distance is relatively small compared to the timescales involved in going from one side to the other. So then in that situation, you can, at low energies, we can integrate out the modes with wavelength which are proportional to the distance, right here. And integrating out those modes will induce the kind of couplings we were discussing. So then the physics of this wormhole could be explained by what we were...
causal couplings in the end.
Yeah, so these are all causal couplings. So everything comes from causal couplings in the full theory. So we are not postulating... I think it would somewhat unnatural to postulate non-causal couplings in the overall theory. Well, at least I'm not willing to do that yet. But
Or
maybe there is some way in which in the boundary theory they are consistent and so on, but the story I'm talking about today does not require a causal couplings in the full boundary theory, in the full theory. So it does not require them. So.
Mm-hmm. But in the history of Steve, you might have said that if you have a single-sided black hole,
yeah.
I think your thought was a single-sided black hole, but it had non-trivial topology inside the horizon, and you have similar effects. I'm not sure how much difference there is between a single-sided black hole with a handle inside that then becomes traversable and a traversable one.
Well, I think the notion of traversability is a notion of whether you can go to the boundary, so to the region outside. For that, you need the two boundaries. I don't know. So if you have some handle inside, okay.
Why isn't there some Z2 quotient in this story that gives you just one boundary?
You could consider that, but then that thing would not be a black hole. So it would be a geometry which is ADS2, right? Then there will be an end of the world brain or something like that in the. I didn't interpret it. Yeah, but yes, that's a possible answer to Steve's question. That's true. Yeah.
Any other questions?
Mm-hmm. I have a simple question about the picture of the throat. So you had located the ADS2 and the nearly ADS2 mm-hmm. in the throat.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Did you really mean that the ADS2 part is closer to the horizon than the nearly ADS2 part? So in the picture, you had the throat.
Yeah.
The part that was closest to the horizon was labeled ADS2, and then the next one was nearly ADS2.
Maybe I should have drawn it. So let's say you have an exactly extremal black hole, right? Then there would be a nearly ADS2 solution. And then there is very deep down here is an ADS2 solution, right? So the correct statement is that quantum effects somehow wash out this. We have nothing here that we can trust. And we only have this nearly ADS2 solution, which we can confidently discuss. So this has no classical description.
If we have
a thermal situation, we want to consider situations where the horizon is somewhere here, okay, in the region we can trust. So if the horizon, if the temperature is lower, then we cannot trust this geometry. We have to do a quantum gravity situation. Yeah.
Any other questions? Okay, well, let's thank Juan again. Mm-hmm.